This is Bruce Zick, the artist of the Atomic Legion and Mandala, and creator of the Zone Continuum, and you are listening to We Be Geeks.
You're listening to a We Be Geeks Network podcast.
USB microphones and headphones provided by CAD Audio. CAD Audio, expression through innovation.
Do not attempt to adjust your device. This is Extreme Freedom Audio Bulletin. It cannot be traced, it cannot be stopped, and it is the only free voice left in the geek revolution.
And welcome back for another episode of We Be Geeks. Jules, I actually say that. Derek and Brett, and I'm going to apologize for last week. Derek was sick as a dog, couldn't talk. Jules had to be up at crack of dawn, couldn't talk. Brett and I, all we had was one topic, and we're like, is this worth really trying to do a show? And, of course, my voice was worse than last week, but still sounds like crap like it does now. So we just put it off for a week, which is okay, because we have a guest for you this week, hence a guest that had been on once before. That's Bruce Zick, hence why we played his show ID before the start of the show. So I'm excited to have him back on, because the Zone Continuum comes out Wednesday, February 24th at a bookstore near you, at a comic book store near you. So I'm excited to see the Zone Continuum coming back. But before he comes on, how you guys doing? It's been a couple weeks, and for Jules, it's been forever.
That's
what it feels like the twilight zone here.
I'm doing better.
Say I haven't been sick, so that's positive.
I'm still sick, but I'm better this week.
See, I haven't been sick for a while. I mean, it's just I got everything stuck in the throat. It just doesn't want to go anywhere.
Do you have a sore throat, or it's just your voice is gone?
It's like just drainage. Everything's just sitting in the throat. Mm. I can't get it to break up and just clear out.
So you're down in the swamps of Florida down there.
What is it, like 70?
I think today we're like mid 70s, but I mean but last week, I mean, it dropped into, we have freeze warnings in the overnights, but next day it would get like into the 50s. So it's like, and then 2 days later, we're up into the 70s. It's like, oh, come on. That's what's killing everyone down here, how whatever down here is going. It's because, you know, we have such a dramatic change in weather, or temperatures this time of year.
Sounds like us. We go from like, we were like -5, and then we were like almost 40. I'm like, how's that even happen?
Yeah,
it was 30 below on Sunday, and today it was 50.
Yeah, see, 30 below.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
See, and
it was freezing.
And that's enough of a drastic temperature change to screw people up there. Whereas I think going from, you know, 10 to 40, it's still in the cool range, where it's not as, I mean, it'd be like saying going from 70 to 90.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, 75 to like 95 is not enough of a change during the, you know, if one day your high is 75, your next day is 87, and then next day it's 95, you're not going to get as sick as if you're going from, you know, the extreme 40, 50 degree temperature changes. So,
well, that is your geek weather report.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't. Oh, wait, no. Wrong one. The geek weather report from our fancy geek computer.
I checked the Star Wars app the other day, and it said even Hoth isn't this cold.
Did it really?
No.
Better bring out your tauntaun.
That was a joke going around up here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't feel so bad about like our 5 degree. 30 degree, I would never survive that. I wouldn't even leave my house.
Yeah, we got a cold from Canada. Thanks, Canada.
Just blame Canada.
Blame Canada. That's my
So, I got for Valentine's Day from my mother-in-law. She sent me this Star Wars trivia game. It's like trivia box. So I'm going to let you guys pick a number. 178, 162, 155, or 141?
141.
Yeah.
Okay, that works. So I'll put these others up. Two questions are on here. So, first question, who was in charge of Echo Base on Hoth? A, General Rekan, B, General Veers, C, General Dodonna, D, General Mills.
General Mills, no.
Echo Base brought to you by the creator by the creators of Cheerios, General Mills.
See,
I was General
Dodonna. So Brent says C, General Dodonna. A, Derek says A, General Rekan or Rekan. What about you, Jules?
I guess I'll go with B then, since nobody else picked it.
General Veers. Well, General Veers is actually a general for the Empire.
That's what I thought. That's why I didn't pick him.
So it would not
I'm
be.
I'm out.
General Dodonna, I believe we don't see until Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, I think so.
Before the battle of maybe. Or do we see him right before the battle of Yavin?
Oh yeah, it's right before the battle of Yavin.
See the old guy wearing like the Planet of the Apes robes?
Yeah, I believe so.
But the answer is General Rekan. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it, so.
See, that's why I got it wrong. If it would have been pronounced right, I would have got it.
Yeah, me too.
But it's spelled R-E-I-E-K-A-N.
It's like right. Yeah, it's like Reagan or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew Veers was Imperial.
Veers is the general. He's the one who's in charge of the AT-AT project.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but that's okay. General Reagan's first name is Porto. The last question on here, because like I said, it's two questions per card. Who said, "Then I'll see you in hell," after receiving a stir warning from a concerned rebel officer? A, Luke Skywalker. B, Han Solo. C, Obi-Wan Kenobi. D, Princess Leia.
That would have to be Han, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's when he's going out on the Tauntaun to rescue Luke.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, because he was telling him not to go out. Oh, I did, because I saw that one. I need to watch the other ones again. It's been a while.
I know. Maybe this is something we should do a couple of these per show. And
yeah, I'm watching them now. So I'm
up for that.
and maybe throw a question out there.
Yeah, we should.
It's
a new segment. Star Wars trivia time, and we could have like game music.
Right.
This is how much of a geek I am. I got the Star Wars Trivial Pursuit years ago, and me and my best buddy, we wouldn't play the game. We just take the cards and read questions to each other and answer the questions.
You almost have to in order to keep up. Yeah, in order to be able to be competitive in the game later.
Yeah. That's what we did with our Doctor Who Trivial Pursuit, because some of it was like in the old Doctor Who, what was this character on this television show that they were watching? You're like, what? That's not even a Doctor Who question. Nobody knows that.
I had one on here. It was in regards to how many TIE fighters on a Star Destroyer. And I can't find that question now.
I have no idea.
A lot.
Yeah.
Not as many as you think.
37.
Yeah.
Higher.
57.
Higher.
102. Higher.
Lower.
84.
Lower.
72.
Okay, here's the question.
Go on a while.
Until I can find the answer. So, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and do the questions on this card then. How many TIE ships are housed in Imperial Star Destroyers? A, 72. B, 82. C, 62. D, 92.
A.
92.
A. Correct answer is A, 72.
Yes! I got 2 for 2. after all that negotiating.
And then the second question, what did the TIE Advanced Times 1 have that regular TIE fighters lacked? A, solar panels. B, a targeting computer. C, a hyperdrive. D, a life support system.
Yeah, hyperdrive.
Jules.
Come on, Jules.
I need to find the Jeopardy theme song.
I'm going to go with the hyperdrive too.
Correct answer is hyperdrive. Because that's how Vader was able to bounce around, especially after the Death Star.
Yeah.
So, I guess a big thing that happened this week, Deadpool broke all types of records, for, largest gross for an R-rated movie on a preview night, pulled in what, 140 something million, something like that for the weekend. Who's got the numbers?
Nice.
And it still kills me to see on Facebook the stupidity of some parents.
Yeah, it's almost depressing.
Yeah, I'm trying to...
Did a $300 million worldwide weekend for the debut.
Which is amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. So is the movie.
Well-deserved, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen it yet, so I can't...
You have to let us know when you go see it. So we
I'm going to see it. I will be seeing it.
You're going to love it. It's so good. Love it so much.
I want to see it again so bad.
I thought it was, out of any movie that was out of the theater now or coming up, I was like, this is perfect Valentine's Day movie. Because they always release the like girly ones. Like, oh, this person loves this person. Like, no way. This was the best Valentine's movie ever. They should like every year just play it.
Well, there were love scenes in it, weren't there?
Oh, there were. There definitely were. I was like, but
they're very seasonal.
Yes.
Yes. More Valentine's than you were expecting.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I cannot.
It is a love story.
Yeah, I was actually very surprised it was. I knew this there was like a love interest in it, but I didn't realize it was so like much that. Of it. So it's good.
Yeah.
I cannot find this picture, and I know it's been all over the place. But of course, I'm looking for it, so it's not gonna pop up. Go figure. Ah, here we go. So someone, this ranks right up there with the Dave Grohl picture, that comment from Facebook. You know, if Dave Grohl shaves his facial hair, he'll look like the drummer from Nirvana?
Yeah.
Really?
That one kills me. I wonder why.
And you know what? If you took the guy who did the voice of Joker, he sounds a lot like Luke Skywalker. Well, what's another good one we could do?
Indiana Jones looks a lot like Han Solo.
Han Solo, yeah. Yes.
They're twins.
Just with a hat on.
So the initial comment was, well, I had to leave Deadpool shortly into the movie. Should have realized beforehand that it would have been too adult for a 9-year-old. Okay. At least the tickets were only $5. I want to know where that theater is.
Right? Exactly.
They must have went to a matinee.
So
I think I paid $6 for mine in matinee.
Ours was $7.
So they say, live and learn. First person replies, I heard someone else say the same thing. They should give parents some type of warning or give a better rating. And then the first reply under that, you mean like an R rating?
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's
really.
There's a reason for the ratings, for parents to make an informed decision whether or not they can take their kids. Well, obviously, in my opinion, an R rating, I would still even be like, my daughter was 18, I'd still be like, no, you can't see it. You're still kidding. But I mean, I already told her she couldn't see it until she was like at least 30.
Yeah. Yeah.
30. So,
and then there's a little box right next to the R that tells you why it's an R.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's anything that you could think that would happen pretty much checked off.
Like
that
on
box.
The trailer.
Yeah.
You mean like on the
it'll
trailer?
Say,
say
it'll
R
say R,
R,
and then right next to it, it'll say
well,
yeah.
Language, graphic violence.
Yeah.
What is sexual what content?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It'll say it right on the poster even too. Rated R, and these are the reasons. Now, here's the funny thing. The person who replied, they should have issued a warning or something. Where were you when Ryan Reynolds said, don't take your kids?
Yeah. It is not a kids movie.
Where were you when the one woman tried to put the petition out there to get it a PG-13 rating and everyone laughed, including Ryan Reynolds? And of course, we had talked about it here. We talked about it over on Mighty Marvel Geeks. No, Deadpool, if you're going to make Deadpool PG-13, it's called Freakazoid.
Yeah.
It's not PG-13.
Like 2 minutes long.
Yeah, so I was going to say it'd be about 10 or 15 minutes long if they did that.
I think part of the problem, and I'm not defending it, is that even like the other day, and I think I texted you guys on Ultimate Spider-Man, Deadpool was in it. Mm-hmm. And it's not R-rated, obviously. So like little kids are like, oh man, Deadpool, he's so cool, he's so funny. And then they hear that this Deadpool movie's coming out. And in the trailer, they don't really show, I mean, they show kind of violence, but they don't show any of the like F-bombs or anything.
No.
So like, and, you know, an 8-year-old might be like watching that Ultimate Spider-Man. Like my daughter, she's like, Deadpool's so funny. And I was like, oh, here we go. I was like, you're not going to see it.
But here's the thing that gets me. I don't remember seeing any Red Band trailers. Now, Red Band means it's
There was.
Oh, there was.
Were there? Was there one?
There was.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing it.
I did.
Yeah,
so,
I saw it too.
So, according to the motion picture, the MPAA, Motion Picture Association of America, here's the ratings. G, general audience, all ages permitted. It's not Deadpool. It says, nothing that would offend parents for viewing by children. PG, parental guidance suggested. Some material may not be suitable for children. Parents are urged to give parental guidance. Keywords, parental guidance may contain some material parents might not like for their young children. PG-13, parents strongly cautioned. Some material may be inappropriate for children under the ages of 13. Parents are urged to be cautious. Some material may be inappropriate for pre-teenagers, for preteens. So, Star Wars Force Awakens was rated PG-13. You know what? I know the source material. I took my daughter, who's 6, to go see Star Wars The Force Awakens. I was okay with it. Yeah. But if Deadpool was PG-13, no.
Pushing the boundaries even on PG-13 for Deadpool, I feel, if it was.
Oh, yeah. They pushed the boundaries with R. Because originally...
Yeah.
I agree.
Now, R, restricted. Under 17 requires an accompanying parent or adult guardian. Contains some adult material. Parents are urged to learn more about the film before taking their young children with them.
Right.
Going back to that Facebook post, yeesh. If you saw it was rated R, do your research. Mm-hmm. Ryan Reynolds told you flat out, don't take kids. and then what it was almost rated. It was almost given an NC-17. Actually, I think it was given NC-17 originally, and they had to do some more editing to get it down, but no one 17 and under admitted. Clearly adult. Children are not admitted. Yet, one of the first films that I remember that was NC-17 was Showgirls.
Oh, yeah.
And I still saw young kids in the... an audience.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
yeah. I never seen that, so we can't.
You can watch it with your kids.
Based on that, I think Deadpool should have been rated NC-17 because I don't think anybody 17 or under should have been in there, honestly. No. I feel like my daughter who's 16, like if this was the case and she was 16, I would not take her. It's just, I don't know. I mean, especially those one scenes, that's like, I don't know.
I guess it's a
tough call for like if it, what it should be rated.
Here's an interesting thing. From 68 to 1970, the original ratings were rated G, general audiences, rated M for mature audiences, rated R restricted, which was admission limited to persons older than 16, unless accompanied by a parent or adult. So now it's 17. And then rated X, no one younger than 16 admitted. So, and then from the ratings changed from 70 to 72. And then, what was the first film to go? I'm not sure what the first film was that went PG-13.
I think it was like Clash of the Titans or something like that, I want to say.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, like even with PG-13, I struggle a little bit. I think I was talking about this before. Like I was talking with my daughter about it today, and she's like, Pacific Rim was PG-13, and I saw that. I said, yeah, but that was like, I didn't feel like that there was going to be a lot. They didn't have a lot of time for a story that wasn't going to be just fighting. And, you know, she understands the whole... She's at the age right now where she understands the whole someone gets stabbed, they're not really dead. You know, it's fake blood. She'll even say like, oh, look at all that ketchup. You know, she understands all that. So that is not, but she's really funny because like, if it's like, she's a gamer. So if it's like M for Mature, there's this one game and I can't remember what it's called, but she's like, I can't wait till I can play that, but that's M for Mature. So I can't play it yet. And I'm like, good girl. Like she knows, like she's not allowed to do anything that, you know, she's hopefully will keep with that. But so, yeah.
I think it's dumb that they're trying to make Wolverine. The third Wolverine movie are. They don't need to.
Yeah.
I think it's just following now, the crowd again.
I just think it's odd that now, well, James Gunn brought it up because of a Deadline article talking about, oh, Deadpool's doing this, and now it's setting new standards. Well, okay, well, Guardians kind of did the same thing. Big hit song for the trailer. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, this very song right here was played in the trailers for Guardians.
Ooka, shaka, ooka, 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 shaka, ooka, ooka, ooka.
And then when it came time for the second trailer, it was. So, I mean, big hit songs. So then everyone else started mimicking it, but still couldn't carry through the formula that made Guardians popular. Well, now here's Deadpool. Deadpool kept true to the comic. Deadpool kept, pretty much kept even keel, broke the fourth wall, violent, essentially proved, ooh, a rated R superhero movie, comic book movie, could be successful. Yep. Did we forget about Blade? I believe it wasn't Constantine rated R, or was it PG-13?
I think it might have been R. Not sure. Watchmen.
Watchmen was R.
Oh, yeah. Right about that. Yeah.
Although I'm not sure how big a hit that was.
I know Alan Moore wasn't happy with it.
No.
Comic book movies are and successful. It's been done. Mm-hmm. Recently? Probably not. Still. Easy.
I think, go ahead.
I was going to say, you can't do Deadpool without it being rated R.
Right.
You've already proven you could do Wolverine without it being rated R. Why go rated R and isolate 2/3 of your audience from your final film of the franchise?
Yeah, I think it would just be gratuitous at that point.
Unless they're, because now it sounds like they're going to go, oh, we're going to really take Wolverine to major kill spree.
Berserk. Right. Now, that was one movie that me and my husband both decided we weren't going to take our daughter to. She was younger, of course, when the first one came out. But I just, as far as superheroes go, I was thinking if there's one she probably shouldn't watch, it probably would be Wolverine.
Yeah.
You know, Superman and, you know, the Avengers and stuff like that or whatever, which I didn't, you know. But, you know, and even now, like, I haven't seen him in a while, like rewatching, I would still have to be like, I don't know. But Guardians of the Galaxy, I was a little iffy because of the trailer when they were using the foul language and stuff. I was like, oh, I don't know, because, like, you know, it's just such a judgment call when, but you, it's like her favorite movie ever. Like, she was watching it the other day, and she watches the animated Guardians of the Galaxy now, and she loves that show so much. So, I mean, that movie. So, it's just, I don't know. It's hard, but I mean, R-rated, obviously, no, but like PG-13, right. I think it's a little tough for me to, without seeing it and just kind of like seeing the trailer, like, you know, Batman Heart Superman, I mean, I feel like she might be okay to see that, and she wants to see it, but, you know,
don't waste your time.
She wants to see Wonder Woman. She's excited about Wonder Woman.
Then wait for the Wonder Woman movie.
I think I think we've already seen all of the Wonder Woman we're getting.
Yeah,
so like 2 minutes. Yeah.
And that trailer you were talking about earlier, Mike, was fan made for episode 8.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I looked it up. It's a fan made trailer.
But I thought even StarWars.com touted it as
they
an
have
official.
Like one, they have like one announcement. Trailer that like showed pretty much the ending of the movie, and then saying that we're filming episode 8.
That's the one I was talking about.
Yeah, but there wasn't really a whole lot.
Yeah,
like the basic ending.
Yeah, that's the trailer I was talking about.
Okay, yeah, there was another one that was like long that was fan made.
No.
Okay.
No, I'm talking about it's the official one, which basically it picks up with Luke. Yeah, it's a side shot of Luke. Mm-hmm. Then you see Rey handing over the saber. Then you hear cut.
Yeah.
That's it. And then welcome to the first day of episode 8.
Yeah.
And you see a crew shot, or seeing whoever the either director or the assistant director. Yeah, I'll give that announcement. I was like, okay, this is pretty cool.
Nice. So, I'm excited for
them. I'm going to give a quick shout-out, though, to Rebecca Kennedy. I guess she was just on Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
Oh.
So sweet. I have not had a chance to watch it yet, but apparently a lot of praise for that episode. Mm-hmm. So
nice.
We have anything else?
Oh, I'm on season 6, halfway through of Clone Wars. And I have to say that I think my favorite Jedi of all time is Ahsoka Tano.
Yeah.
She's just awesome, and she got so screwed over by the Jedi Order.
Oh, yeah.
I was so mad.
I don't know. I was always a either Kit Fisto or Plo Koon from the prequels. They're like, my favorite.
It's just awesome.
I'll tell you, I've seen it done on Facebook, and I almost want to do it myself. Every time I go into my local Target, they have a large-scale Darth Vader, and then they have a Kylo Ren that's smaller, and I want to almost have hugging. I almost want to do it. But the other fun one I saw was... it was a 4-panel picture from Robert Downey Jr. And you wide shot, you see a it's like the 12-inch Captain America. The box is on the floor off the shelf, and and then it just so happened to be behind it was an Iron Man.
Yeah.
So, this kind of popped up on my screen as we're recording. As this show goes to air, I'm going to turn around and say a happy birthday to Jules, whose birthday it was when we started recording. But as we wrap recording, I'm going to say happy birthday to Jeff Burns from Super Geeked Up.
Ah, yes.
It's his birthday as well. So
Derek's birthday is coming up too.
Yeah, Thursday.
Yeah, my birthday's coming up in 6 months.
Half birthday.
Since we're doing shout-outs, let me do a shout-out to Tanya and Nicole from Super Geeked Up, going and starting their own show up. So hopefully that will be coming out soon, and we'll get some more information out of that once that starts.
Awesome. So I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back after this.
Did you know that you can shop and support the Weeby Geeks Network at the same time? Every time you use the Amazon link to make purchases, such as a set of CAD Sessions MH510 headphones to listen to the Weeby Geeks Network podcast, a percentage of your purchase goes towards helping the network. So, to review, browse the page, click the link, shop, and repeat. Thanks, and keep listening.
So welcome back to Weeby Geeks, back from a brief break in the show. We are joined this week with a returning guest. At least it's my second time talking to him on the show. The show dynamics have changed a little bit since the last time he was on. But I want to welcome back a gentleman who wrote one of my favorite graphic novels for, I remember, you'll have to correct me afterwards, okay. Was involved with Atomic Legion from Dark Horse. Yes. Had background artist for many Disney films, along with a bunch of other films as well. Creator of The Zone Continuum, which is coming out next week.
February 24th.
In a comic book shop near you, or even online. The creator himself, Bruce Zick. How you doing tonight, Bruce?
I'm doing terrific, thank you. I got a little bit of a frog in my throat, but otherwise I'm fine.
I've been this way for, 3 weeks, guys?
Yeah, it's going around.
I think I caught it from you the last time we talked, Michael.
It's that pesky internet virus.
It's a virus that then becomes a computer virus, and then it becomes a human virus.
Sounds like a concept for another book.
That virus has gone viral.
So, Zone Continuum is back. Last time we talked, the Kickstarter didn't go through.
Right.
We weren't sure what was going to happen with it, but we talked all the glory of Zone Continuum, because I remember getting it as a kid. I think I got it through the convention circuit, because I know it wasn't in that many stores back then. Why don't you bring us up to speed on how Dark Horse is distributing it next week?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on your show, and thanks for your praise of the Atomic Legion, which is a book I love so much, and maybe 20 people have read it. I don't know. But I can never stop talking enough about how much I love that book and how thrilled I am that you like that book.
Oh, I thought it was fabulous.
So, yes, the last time we talked, I had a Kickstarter going on to try to raise the money. I felt like if I could just afford to do the book, I would certainly be able to find a publisher. But the Kickstarter was a dismal experience. I failed horribly and worked so hard at it. And so what the experience taught me was how much you have to really put on a different thinking cap to become a promoter and a hustler and a business person rather than a creative person. And so that frame of mind from the Kickstarter sort of upped my game, and I got aggressive about approaching some people I know and trying to work on my network in a different way to raise the financing independently, relying on some relationships here and there. And so I was able to raise the money that way. And then Dark Horse is always my first option because I live in Portland where they live, and I know Mike Richardson well, and I like the people there a lot. And so once I knew I could raise the money to do the book, I approached Mike and gave him the original Zone books and just showed him what my ideas were, and he said, let's go for it. So that was a little bit over a year ago, and it's taken up till now to, you know, finish all the different jobs of doing the book and getting it ready for press and doing the promotion work. And so now here we are years later, and the book is coming out.
Awesome.
Yep, so it's the long way around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's it took me 24 years basically to bring back the Zone, which is hard to comprehend. That's so much time. A whole other lifespan of people have come into the world since my last effort at it.
Well, how about remind the listeners who were with us back at episode 82 when you were on, and tell our new listeners who have joined us since then what the Zone Continuum is about.
Okay. The basic idea is that the world is divided up into geomagnetic zones. Some zones are maybe 3 or 4 miles from edge to edge, top to bottom. But if you imagine a bunch of cubes, invisible cubes all over the Earth, each cube is a zone where where ancient people called the Dar live, who are the first people of Earth. And they are attuned to their zone and their zone only, and they must live and die in that zone. If they were to go to the barrier on any of the edges of their zone, the top, the bottom, or any of the four sides, and try to go through the zone, they would experience a horrible death. So they're all trapped in their zones. The zones are everywhere. And the story focuses on Zone 27, which is in the heart of New York City. And what's happened over the centuries with these ancient people is that as humans have gone through their technological revolution, and now they're bombarding the planet with electromagnetic waves and microwave transmissions, and pollution is causing climate change and all that, it's impacting these invisible zones that these ancients live in, and the zones are becoming unstable and causing eruptions and ruptures and breaches of horrible beast-like demons that are just all energy, but they're attacking the Dar who live in their zones. And so the Dar have to go into this technological race to devise items that can help them survive the attack of the continuum instability. And they've gotten to the point where if the humans keep evolving and creating more interference with their zones, they will die. So there's a debate on whether or not humans should live or humans should be eradicated. And in Zone 27, the leaders of the Dar live there. And the Zone 27, stop me when I've gone too far. Zone 27 is one of the most affected of the zones and is shrinking all the time. And as it shrinks, it's rising up above sea level and forcing the people within Zone 27 to have to live higher and higher up in building tops. And they can never go back down to the ground again. So now they're living 150 feet above the ground in the rooftops and the penthouses and this whole upper world jungle that is not really known down on the street level to normal people. So that's it in a nutshell.
Okay. So where do we go from here with the Zone Continuum coming out on the 24th? I mean, can you tease it a little bit?
You mean, where does the story start?
Yeah. I mean, is it picking up from the originals?
What I realized was for the new readers, I needed to sort of retell the origin story again because I just didn't want to plop people people into the middle of action and then have to create all these story devices to creatively tell exposition without it being exposition, which is really hard to do. So I just thought, let me just sort of reboot it, quickly tell the origin story with a lot of new twists and turns that aren't in the original books, and then get on to the new story. So you get to see, again, for the first time, how the characters meet and why their lives become intertwined, but then the conflicts that take place are different than in the original books. So you watch the characters meet, and then almost immediately the main thrust of the story is introduced that the main character's name is Talon, and he is assisted by a djinn, which is spelled D-J-I. I-N-N, a djinn as in a genie.
Okay.
And they live in a water tower, an abandoned water tower is their headquarters on a rooftop. And that's where Talon, operates his empire as leader of the worldwide Dar. And he's challenged by an enemy by the name of Spear, who wants to fight Talon for leadership of the Dar. And if Spear wins, then his first decision as president, sort of like the Republican and Democratic election coming up, the winner will destroy all humanity, if Spear wins, to save the continuum and restore the Earth back to its Garden of Eden paradise. And if Talon wins, then humans will continue to live, but then he has to find a way to save the zones and stop the pollution and all the radiation from destroying the zones. So it's a battle to determine the fate of humanity. And that happens almost immediately on like the fourth page of the story. The challenge is made, and then we have to see, who's going to win how humanity will or will not survive.
So this is going to be an ongoing then?
Well, I think the first graphic novel, which is basically four book-length chapters, mm-hmm. it follows the first arc of their contest. And as any hopeful writer will do, he'll end it without ending it so that the fight is left to continue on. Although I have to say, I can't say. So I won't give it away. It's an ending for sure where you feel like you've gone through a complete three-act play, basically, in the 100 pages of the story. But there's so many loose threads, and it's such a complex mythology that there's infinite possibilities to keep going with it.
So what have the advanced reviews been like to the book so far?
Honestly, I have not gotten one yet. I just was interviewed today by one website who's going to run a review in a couple days, and that'll probably be the first review that'll come out and that I'll actually receive.
Okay. Well, I can say I have started reading it, and I have fallen back in love with the continuum, and I feel like it's picked up essentially where it left off.
Cool.
Or almost that Star Wars type vibe where you could tell some time has passed.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the direction it's going. I'm loving the story. I'm just glad to see the characters back and the artwork.
I'm so glad to hear you say that.
So I will officially give the first review right there.
All right.
I will beat that other website.
Well, I'm going to get on social media and quote you. And
yes.
5 stars.
I think your artwork really matches the story really well.
Yeah.
The artwork really matches the story really well with the gritty type world that they're in with the coloring and the artwork.
Oh, thanks. I actually have a bone to pick about the coloring. I did the coloring, but then when I got the books, it was really dark. And there was a color shift towards the red spectrum that I didn't want. And I was actually very very unhappy with the way the color turned out. I have to live with it because there's nothing I can do about it. And hopefully it's not too distracting, because it's pretty dark. But then again, maybe that's going to be better. I don't know.
Now, was this something that happened at the printer? that this changed?
The main problem in production that a lot of people experience is, you know, you're doing the coloring on your home computer, and you never know to the types of variances of your monitor system versus when you send the digital files to the home base and they prep it for the printing. You know, their monitors might see it differently than my monitors, and maybe I think I've got a nice light, lowly saturated kind of color scheme, but maybe my monitors are sort of worn out, and in actuality, maybe it's a rich, heavily saturated coloring I've done. So what you rely on is the proofs before it goes to press. The artist has to see the color proofs before it's printed, just to make sure. And they literally print it out on an Epson printer, and you can look at it and go and make your comments, which has happened always on other books I've done. But for one reason or another, it didn't happen this time, much to my regret. So I had no final input before the books were printed.
Okay.
I don't want to whine too much about it, but I'm still whining about it.
I saw it on an iPad, and I thought it looked...
Maybe it works for people, like what Brett's saying. Maybe it matches the tone of the story, so maybe it's okay. I can only hope.
Yeah, that might be just something where it's not quite what you were hoping for, but nobody else would probably notice it that much.
Well,
that's true. Yeah.
I know that.
Having an artist eye looking at it.
Yeah.
I don't know if Derek talked to to Mike Richardson, who's the publisher of Dark Horse, but that's exactly what he said. only you know the way you wanted it to look. And my dogs are starting to fight now. And the reader...
See, they're not happy either.
And so, anybody want to see my dogs?
Sure. Aw.
Cute.
Aw, they love each other.
Yeah.
If this keeps up, I'll have to throw them out. And
stop it. No fighting. Go to the couch.
Seems to be a thing on We Be Geeks. I think our last guest, we had a dog intro into there, too.
Yeah.
They hear you talking, and then suddenly that gets them all riled up.
Yeah.
Bad dog.
I'm pulling out the worst weapon a dog can hear.
Bad. Bad dog.
Or as Tart would say, Umgawa.
So I guess to continue on with Zone Continuum. The continuum of the continuum. what is Dark Horse telling you prediction-wise what to expect with this book?
Nothing so far. I originally we were going to do the Zone as a four books comic series, and I'm sort of in love with the standard comic book format. I just love a 24 page chunk once a month. Anticipate the next chapter, and I don't know. I'm just programmed for that format, and a lot of the consensus these days is that the market is really changing a lot, and with the smaller, Dark Horse is relatively a big publisher, but their market share is really not that big, and a lot of their titles, they just sort of break even or maybe lose a bit, make a little bit, but they just said, honestly, if you do it as four books, there's a good chance it won't even break even, and because it's just such a tight market, and the main publishers, Marvel and DC, are always trying to pump out more titles and come up with a lot of gimmicks to eat up the market share, and more publishers are coming in every day, and it's just a saturated market, but the graphic novels are a growing market, and you have a better chance, you know, in many respects of seeing it more successful. So that's the way we went, and it's too early to tell what the orders are going to be, and certainly you need to give it time to percolate and see if it sells so that there's reorders, and then if there's enough reorders and then it goes into a second printing, that's where you sort of see it take off, is if it goes into a second printing. So it's anybody's guess right now what's going to happen with it.
So it seems like then Dark Horse has taken the approach of, unless it's a well-known title like any of the Mike Mignola stuff, yeah, or Avatar or right, or like that, they want to go with the graphic novel, yeah, approach, yeah, to benefit, yeah, them and to benefit the creators.
Exactly. I mean, even the Mignola books now are, I think they've really peaked out and they're selling pretty low. BPRD and most of their titles are, I think, sort of steadily dropping to a much lower tier than they used to be on a few years ago. So I think probably with them and some other publishers in that range, they're not real happy about, you know, how the business is going, and they love comic book format as much as we do, but they're just struggling with how to make it all work at this point.
I can understand that, because I know a lot of times when I go into the comic book store, I'll pick up like 5 trades of something, and I'm like, this is what I'm taking home, just because you can sit there, you can read it all at once, like binge reading for me, because I don't have a lot of time and stuff, so I do a lot better with just reading it, and I'm like, and then like you have to wait for the next trade to come out, so there's more, I guess, not so much more demand, but it's like, you know what you're getting when you go back in. I'm getting the next trade, you know, when it comes out, so you're looking for the next trade. So
yeah, and there's a lot of stores I understand that, you know, are really going to the majority of their stock inventory being graphic novels, like, you know, 20% comics and 80% graphic novels, so there's definitely a change going on. Whether or not that's sustained, nobody knows.
I know for me, like with Marvel, they just did Captain America Blue, and I want to get the series, but it's just going to be easier for me to get the trade when it comes out instead of all five issues, only because of space. Right. I've got the bookshelf space to throw trades up. To try and keep short boxes or long boxes, I just don't have the room for it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's, I'm old fashioned. I still go to the comic book shop every week, and I buy single issues. And
I get single issues. It's just, I'm having to be selective of what single issues.
Yeah.
I think the trades I can grab. Emotionally, I love the single issue format. It's sort of do you binge watch a TV show? Or do you see it in installments once a week and sort of, you know, the build a little anticipation for the next one and the next one, and also be part of a cultural block that's experiencing it together. In a big theater, you know, you're all experiencing it together, right, socially, versus just watching it at home by yourself any time of the day or night, and not being in synchronicity with, you know, your friends about it.
I think binge watching and things like that, I think you kind of lose a lot too when you're going through with the motions. It seems like after a while it doesn't really resonate with you quite as much.
Yeah, I think so too, although I do love the idea of getting hooked on one episode and then
before Netflix makes it so easy. They just automatically go to the next episode. You're like, well, it's already here. I might as well watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you know you're 5 episodes in.
And for me, I think it just depends on the show. I mean, there's some shows on TV I almost wish I could just sit down and binge watch. Other shows, it's like, okay, yeah, it's almost like the comics. I can wait for, you know, I get excited waiting for the next episode, and it's like, okay, something to look forward to. You know, I'm the same way with the comics, but there's some stuff, you know, I get into it late, and it's like, well, it's easier for me to get caught up and build up my collection of all the back issues by just getting the trades of the collective volumes instead of trying to go back and get each individual issue, right. Especially with the cost of comics these days.
I think from a creator's point of view, I may be wrong, but I for myself, I find it appealing that maybe the experience of reading your story in, say, four books over 4 months, it's sort of out there in the universe as an experience for 4 months or 6 months, and it just sort of becomes alive and becomes a force or an entity,
right?
Versus somebody sitting with it for like 60 minutes, you know, just binge reading the whole thing, and then the experience is over for a year or whenever you can get back to doing the next graphic novel.
Right.
Then I must be weird on how I read my graphic novels then, because I'll read. Yeah, I might read one that, like with Zone Continuum, I'll probably read the one chapter, give it a few days, give it a chance to digest, absorb,
yeah.
And then maybe 2-3 days later, pick it back up again and read the next step.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
I mean, something like that. I mean, even like when some of the early trades I first picked up that were collected volumes, that's how I read it. It's like, okay, I'm going to read a book and then wait a few days, read the second part, read the next book of the collected volume,
mm-hmm.
and just keep going that way.
Well, I hope that there's enough substance, say, in one 24-page chapter of The Zone where you sort of feel a little saturated at the end of the 24 pages, that there's been a substantial story that you've been hit with, so that you do want to digest it. Otherwise, it's always a struggle to know, like, to tell a lot of a story, or maybe readers these days have short attention spans, so you don't want to tell a lot of story. You want it to be easy. How many words are on one page? You know, do you really throw a lot of exposition and dialogue, or do you just let the artwork tell the story and kind of breeze through it? And I always struggle with that. I like the original idea of a graphic novel literally having novel-esque qualities to it, that it's a deeper read. I think because of the comics I grew up on, it took a long time to read a 22-page Marvel comic or something. It was sort of in a movie that had three acts to it, and they go to a lot of different places, a lot of things happen. The words per page were humongous, and now the words per page are pretty lightweight, and you can read a comic book fairly quickly. Oh, I'm getting on my soapbox again.
Yeah. Oh, no.
you must have been talking about the old West Coast.
Stop me before.
So
you must have been talking about the old West Coast Avengers books then.
So when you came up with this idea with Dark Horse, did you know going in that it was going to be a graphic novel, or did you write it in like as 4 separate issues?
I thought it was going to be 4 books.
Okay.
4 separate books. I wrote it with the idea of, each book would end in a sort of a cliffhanger. And then a teaser for what's coming next, sort of a thing. And in that sense, it's still it easily adapts to a graphic novel format where, each chapter has a beginning, middle, and end to it. But yet, it was always meant to be a 4-book larger story arc that had its own 3-part structure to it, just as each book has its own smaller arc to it. But I really resisted it for a long time, switching to the graphic novel format. I just wanted that monthly comic book out, and I was pretty disappointed with it. But I understood the business decision that needed to be made.
So would you have approached it differently writing it if you would have gone into it knowing it was a graphic novel instead of 4 separate issues?
Yeah, I don't know. I might not have felt so constricted by a 24-page sort of increment. I honestly, in the format of the book now, there's like a 24-page story, and then there's like a breather page that's sort of like a blank filler page in the book, and then you flip the page, and then there's an image that's sort of the title image for the next chapter, and then you flip another page, and then the next story begins, and there's there's something I like about there being breaks between each chapter in a graphic novel rather than it all sort of being run together. I think it can be pretty dense. And I think one of the things I keep moving towards more and more is to have an open breathing quality to there being dense sections and then light sections. And even I used to love to do bleeding pages. You know, every page bled out to the edges, and the artwork took up as much space as I could, you know, fill out onto what the page limits were. And I even noticed even then that it got so busy where every page was completely full to the cut of the page, and then the page opposite it was also busy and bleeding out. And I felt like there was really an eye fatigue where every page was just kind of demanding so much of your eye time. And now I'm much more oriented towards that white border on the edges of a page that kind of frames the artwork, and the artwork's a little bit smaller, but the negative space becomes to me a very critical ingredient, and whether the story just kind of assaults you and you get fatigue with it, or whether it's comfortable. I mean, I don't know if that's just me. I don't know if that's something other people experience, but that's I'm definitely moving more and more into that direction.
Good.
Less is more. It's like the final frontier for some artists, I think.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
What are the chances of Zone Continuum getting picked up for a second book?
Just depends on the sales.
So everyone buy.
Yes.
That was what I was going to say. Go buy it. Buy it for your loved ones. Buy it for yourself.
We need to form a fan club and get everybody involved. Everybody committed. Everybody brings in 10 people, and they bring in 10 people, and we'll all be part of a big club, and then we can all share in the rewards of it.
Do you have plans for if there's a next one?
I don't have an actual story in mind. What I did was I painted a lot of corners to put myself into with these first four chapters. I created some loose ends that didn't get all knitted nice and neatly that suggest what's coming next, but I have no idea how to get them out of those predicaments and how it would balance out to tell the next phase of the story. But I think that's how a lot of people do things. I have a feeling like when a book ends in a cliffhanger in 1 month, and it looks like for sure the character is going to be destroyed. Probably at that point, the writer doesn't know, you know, until it's time to write the next installment. They don't necessarily know how to get him out of it. It's sort of like that Perils of Pauline kind of format of the old movie serials, where your only job at the moment was to create the most impossible scenario of hopelessness. And then later, right before that plane crash, we now can reveal that there was an open door that they jumped out of or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, those are the best ones. I love reading that. And then, like, your hope is restored and you're, you know, going on with your merry day of reading. But, you know, I like cliffhangers, though. So.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's part of creating that anticipation. I mean, something has to... I mean, you can do books that have a complete story unto themselves every month, but I think in that format, maybe still it's nice to feel like something is continuing on that you anticipate. Or maybe it's just, you know, if you love the characters and the stories, you just can't wait for the next good story.
Yeah.
So I guess you don't have to tease them in with an artificial construct necessarily, but I think I'm drawn to that old-fashioned kind of cliffhanger format.
Yeah, I think there should be like an element of danger where instead of them just easily going through things,
yeah,
the characters, there should be some kind of element of danger where they don't have it so easy.
Well, I noticed in watching the TV versions of superheroes, Flash is a good comparison. You know, they'll complete the story in that one episode on TV, but then there'll be the epilogue that's maybe 30 or 60 seconds long, or hour or so, and then they just throw out the next threat. You know, it has nothing to do with the story you've just watched, but they end it with that teaser.
Right.
And so I can appreciate that because it's sort of like an Easter egg almost or something.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did Zone Continuum get started? I mean, what inspired you to do this universe?
Okay, well, when I worked a lot in animation, doing backgrounds, I always loved working on shows that took place in cities. And particularly, anytime part of the story took place on rooftops, I did a lot of research for my job to portray the world of the rooftops. And I found rooftops just so fascinating. I think because where most people live, on the streets, where they interact, and in apartments, they don't see rooftops. Unless you're in a higher building looking down where you can see a lot of rooftops, but even then you're not on the rooftop. And so the only people that go up to rooftops are the heating and cooling repair people and people fixing water pipes and whatnot. But it really is a very fascinating visual world. And a strange architectural and mechanical jungle up there. So I always loved that setting, and I particularly just was fascinated with water towers. A lot of them are not in use anymore, but they're just sitting on rooftops everywhere. There's gazillions of them in New York City, and they just leave them up there. So and then one day I was actually I'll show you. Oh, dead space here. Oh, no, actually, I can't find it. Never mind. Sorry for that dead space. One day I was looking in a book of Japanese fashion photography, and they had a picture of this guy kind of jumping in air wearing this really cool kind of slick vinyl trench coat with these big collars that were up, and you could hardly see his face, and he was just sort of leaping in this thing. And I just couldn't stop looking at this image, and I thought, there's a costume. Now, who is this guy? What, how can I turn this into a story? And I just suddenly felt like I needed to put him in the rooftop world of New York City. And so one little piece after another, I just started finding elements that seemed to want to fit together, like the idea of the zones and the rooftop and being confined to the rooftops. You can't live anywhere else, so this is your prison, but it's also your home. And with the main character Talon, who lives in the water tower, his wife was forced years ago to live in Zone 26, which is a couple miles away, adjacent to Zone 27, also part of New York City. And the backstory is in leading right up to the first atomic bomb test in the Manhattan Project. Zone 26 and Zone 27 were just one zone, and Talon, the main character, lived with his wife, Paris, together in their zone. And when the atomic bomb was tested, the ramifications of that impact in the ecosystem shattered Zone 27 and caused it to split into two smaller zones. And each a half of the people that lived in Zone 27 could only be in one or the other. They had to break apart their respective zones that were like pulling apart to separate forever. And so Talon's wife had to leave him, and now they can't be together again. So there's this great love story sort of element that I think is really important to me, that it's an unrequited love. They can't be together again, but they're always trying to find a way to break the barrier to be together again someday, they hope. And so I found it very appealing that the idea of people living in their separate zones is a metaphor for our human condition. I mean, we're all kind of stuck in our own zones in a lot of ways, and we're all struggling to break through. And in relationships, you can be completely in your own zone and not able to understand your partner in their respective zone. And relationships are always about breaking out of your boundaries and learning how to relate to each other. So I liked a certain sort of hidden message of that. And then I was also drawn to my concerns about the environment and what was happening 24 years ago, how bad it was. And now 24 years later, it's really accelerated. But 24 4 years ago, I wanted to address the concerns about what was happening with the ecosystem. So all these different things just sort of kind of rushed into the emptiness of where I started and all wanted to be a part of the story.
Okay. So what's next on your plate?
Well, doing another series for Dark Horse that's most likely going to run in Dark Horse Presents. I've got 14 8-page chapters, and I'm going to do the 15th and final chapter of a whole new epic that takes place underwater in the dinosaur age. And,
okay.
And it's called The Legends of Lemuria. And it's sort of like the, you know, we always experience the dinosaur Jurassic period on land. And I'm always wondering, what was the water world version of the Jurassic world? What kind of strange dinosaur prehistoric creatures and places and entities and life forms and biology? You know, what a rich world that would be to base a story in. And so that's what I'm doing is it's just this sprawling epic saga underwater. And so that's about 3/4 done at this point. And it's now my new favorite thing.
That's a really interesting idea.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. There's a you know, the fish out of water expression? There's the best fish out of water hook in this story. I don't want to give it away because it's essential to the surprise of the first chapter of the story. But it's got the ultimate fish out of water gimmick.
Nice. Are you doing the art and writing on this, or
yeah, art and writing and color, okay. just like the zone.
Okay.
And another old series of mine, Terminal Point, which was also from Dark Horse in the 90s. It was a 3-book series. That's going to be reprinted by Caliber Press as a graphic novel. So most people probably don't know about Terminal Point. So it'd be nice to put that out into the world again and let people read it, and also read it in a nice high quality format, because the printing back in the 90s was pretty the blacks are sort of gray and it was sort of all washed out on almost newsprint like paper, and I just can't wait to see it really richly, lushly printed with today's technology. So and also I think there's going to be some more Atomic Legion stories coming out.
Nice.
And yes. And that I think the publisher will probably want to repackage the Atomic Legion in a cheaper book format, because as Mike knows, it came out as basically $30 oversized hardbound book,
yeah.
Which, you know, just killed it for a lot of people. And stores didn't want to order it, I think, because it was a totally new book. Nobody knew anything about it. It was in a very expensive prestige format. And it just sort of laid there. Yeah. So I think we're going to see.
I have the digital copy.
Okay.
So, but I want a hard copy. Okay. I want to get an actual physical copy.
Well, maybe since you're such a good guy, I just might send you one. What do you think about that?
That'd be awesome.
I think you just made Mike's day.
Yeah.
If I wasn't already speechless from lack of voice, I'm definitely speechless now.
Well, I think you deserve it. I appreciate getting the time to talk about things with you guys.
Oh, I know last time it was just me and Marty, and we had a blast with you then as well.
Yeah,
so now I mentioned during the intro that you also did some work on animation.
Right.
I know. My daughter would love the fact that you did some work on, was it backgrounds for Frozen?
Right. You know, it's funny. As in most cases, I work on a story at the very beginning in pre-production. And usually a year or two later, it's all been completely rewritten again many more times, so that much of what I do never ends up on the screen. And that was the case with Frozen, where I originally worked on the project when it was called The Snow Queen. And it had a completely, entirely different story. Not one second of it was used in the Frozen version that came years later. So I can technically sort of say I worked on Frozen, but I can't point to one single thing that I actually did on. Although I did a lot of versions of the castle, that the ice castle, but I don't think they were probably considered when they rewrote the story and needed a new ice castle.
Right. So what other film projects or TV projects have you worked on?
So I worked on Inside Out. I did a lot of work on that file. And I just finished working on a new Pixar movie that I can't talk to you about.
Darn.
Because we don't know who else might be listening. I signed a non-disclosure agreement. I did some new artwork on the collector's edition of Iron Giant that came out last year. There was a couple minutes of new footage that
right, created.
Put into it, and so I got to work with Brad Bird and do new artwork for that, for the new 2 minutes of footage.
Now, I gotta ask, with Atomic Legion, how much was Iron Giant an influence on that book?
In my mind, none. Just because I had seen Iron Giant so long ago, and I can't say I was a huge fan of it like a lot of people are.
I wasn't a huge fan of the movie myself either.
I certainly had a lot of respect for it, but that was so long ago that when it came time to do robots for the Atomic Legion, I think it was more a case of sort of just loving that old retro look of the clunkiness of the simplicity of the robots of the 30s, basically. The naivete of simple technology that, and somehow they were mechanical and walked and talked, but it just didn't look like it was an intelligent mechanical thing. but we were all sort of pulling from that same love for the retro thing. And I think I sort of call the Atomic Legion, maybe it's called steelpunk versus steampunk, being more the boring age. I think the 30s maybe is more like steelpunk. So it's got a very 30s, 40s kind of technology.
I think I said last show, it definitely had a like Sky Captain, the World of Tomorrow type feel to it.
Yeah. That was pretty amazing seeing that.
Yeah. Speaking of steampunk, I think Continuum kind of has that kind of a bit of appeal to it as well.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope when I did the first four books, I was a lot less distracted. I lived in a simpler time, and I was drinking a lot more coffee. And I think I just went totally bonkers on the original four books. Like, every inch of every page had to be exploding with gadgets and gizmos and buildings and things. And it's very punky. I tried to create a little bit more of a streamlined, not streamlined as in the 30s deco kind of streamline, but I wanted to maybe simplify it a little bit to be not quite so busy. But still, I think I go back to that kind of 30s and 40s technology. I like technology that has a lot of nuts and bolts and rivets and conduit and piping and flashing lights. And it's a little bit of a quaintness to it, I think.
Yeah, I feel I like that stuff too.
The worst thing for me in the world is like in the Star Trek: The Next Generation, where they fly the spaceship by sitting at this light table and just fingertips around. Like, okay, we're gonna steer this 300 gazillion ton spaceship to the left, and you just go like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I like to. In Flash Gordon, where they were moving these giant levers and wheels on the wall, and just like reaching up and just grabbing things, and they were sweaty, and they were trying to fly the spaceship with muscles and sweat and blood. I think they call it instrumentality. I like a certain instrumentality to things rather than the clean sort of digital or non-instrumentation kind of progress of technology.
Well, it makes it feel more real, too, when you see it than you think that would actually happen in real life. But.
Yeah.
How was it going back to that story after so long?
Well, that's a great question. And by the way, I don't know why people always say that, like when you're on talk shows and things, and the commentator asks a question, and then the first thing the person says is, "That's a great question." It's almost like it's etiquette to compliment the question before you answer it. And there's some understood agreement I think all journalists have to say that first. So thank you for that question. And one of the reasons I felt like the Zone was essentially on the right track when I first did it was that I got such amazing fan response. It wasn't like a huge selling book, but I got letters. The letters, you wouldn't believe the letters. My God, I got letters. And people just were loving it. They were just raving. And we formed a fan club for the Zone books called the Fotzers, which was FTZ, Friends of the Zone, FOTZ. And I had a Fotzer club for a couple of years before I had to go a different direction with my career. But I felt like there was something essentially very right about the Zone Continuum. But after a few years had gone by and I got to look back at it with some time and wisdom, I saw a lot of major flaws in where I took the story. And so I always sort of wanted to go back and maybe tell it differently and better. So when I got the chance to do the new books, it was sort of a chance to make those corrections and tell a different story. And the original books had a very small cast of just a handful of main characters. And then all the other characters were very secondary, kind of nameless, generic technicians and assistants and so on and so forth. And so I wanted to have a really strong supporting cast in the new books of interesting characters and explore more the worldwide mythology of the network of these people so that you didn't feel like the story was only taking place just in Zone 27, just with our main characters, but that there was a planetary group of people also involved in the story and the stakes of the story. So, and I also felt like in the beginning series that the dangers they face when the continuum becomes unstable, originally there would be just like forms of energy, shapeless energy that would attack you and try to destroy you. And I wanted to give that more of a face or an understandable form that was more creature-like, almost like the continuum was a living entity, and when it was damaged and destabilized by pollution and radiation, that it contorted like an animal would to attack you in animal forms. So I went very anthropomorphic with how the continuum existed. And there were some things with the love story I never really got to do that I really wanted to schmaltz up an emotional core to the story, which I felt was lacking. And I wanted much more simple stakes at play. I think in their original books, it was very esoteric what the true plot and the true goals of the characters were. And so I wanted to bring that down to earth on a much more understandable level and make the dangers a little bit more immediate and make the drama more intense emotionally. So thank you for that question.
Sure. That was a good answer.
Yeah.
I mean, I can only hope that I've done all of that. I honestly don't know. That's why I'm anxious when the reviews come out. You work with the publisher, and the publisher has an editor that's assigned to you, and they're there sort of covering your back. But they don't tend to get involved on a really complex level of your story. They're there more to make sure it's correct and that you haven't missed any gaping continuity gaps or, that your grammar and your spelling and everything is correct English. But I don't think their purpose is to get involved in your creation on a certain level. And in actual sexuality, I sort of feel like I need that from a good editor. I need somebody going, hey, dude, I don't have any idea what you're talking about here. Or don't you see that when you did this, then that doesn't make any sense because you already did that. You know, I'd like that sort of a guiding editorial input, and so right. When I don't have it, I can just only hope that I didn't really screw it up, and I hope I'm not delusional in thinking that I've told a good story, but I honestly don't know.
Oh, we are our toughest critics, so
yeah.
and I keep telling people, I can take it, let me have it, you know. I kept telling my editor, give it to me, you know, break it down, tell me what's wrong, you know. Oh no, it really works, it's really great. And just, I hope you're right.
Now, when this book comes out next Wednesday, will it be hardcover as well, or are they doing a paperback?
It's a soft-bound graphic novel. I'm leaving you again. But, it's always amazing that I can't find something when I'm looking for it. I'll show you the book. I have it here somewhere. Oh, wait a minute. The problem is I strained up my studio the other day, and now I don't know where anything is. But here's the book.
Nice.
Oh, amazing.
Shiny and pretty.
It's shiny. And here's the back. I like how they designed the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
And then a couple nice things about the book. Look at this. And here's a two-page spread.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't think I've gotten that far yet.
Well, that's only page 2 and 3.
Okay, then I'm so far past it, I forgot about it. Where am I at? I think I'm like around page 18, 19.
Oh, okay. So something else we did that's fun in the back is we have a glossary of terms, because it really is a pretty dense story concept.
Yeah.
There's a lot of science, fake science and real science behind it, and I don't want it to feel like it's important to understand that science to enjoy the story, but it adds, I just wanted to add a richness without being confusing. But anyway, we decided to just go back into it at the back of the book and just take some of the terms that we were throwing around and give some detailed definitions of it.
See, to me, this book sounds like it would be a great launching point for a movie as well.
Because you're
giving them essentially the terminology for a director or producer to go, okay, now I know how we need to do the set design on this, how we need to go about props. I mean, it's almost laid out perfectly for
it. I agree. I think it's sort of like storyboarding a movie. You know, yeah. Choosing panels and your pages is to me, I think that I always felt like reading comics was like becoming immersed in a movie.
Yeah.
Because I think what happens when you're young, and I think we might have talked about this the last time, but I think when you're much younger and you look at a page, you can sort of go right into that panel and right. be enveloped within the border of that one panel. And it just sweeps you away into the story, and you sort of stay there until the very last page. You're inside the book, you're in the story, and your outer real world doesn't exist. And so I always felt like reading a comic book was just like seeing a movie.
Yeah.
And in doing it myself now, I still see it as a movie that's unfolding, and I'm just picking, you know, I'm more the director, cinematographer, set decorator, editor, rather than a comic book artist. And,
right.
And I do think that this book is a great blueprint for a three-act movie structure, and we certainly want it to be a movie, of course. We want to... Or I think even better, I love the TV episodic format.
Yeah.
I love the idea of having 10, you know, or 20 chapters to tell a much deeper, longer, more rich story that a TV show has versus, well, it's just 2 hours. It took 2 years to do. And now, you know, you're going to have to wait another two years for the next 2 hours.
I could see it as a show possibly on Netflix even.
Well, you know what?
Get a little grittier.
I'm just signing a deal with a small independent production company who's got partial financing, and they're going to try to, they've optioned the Zone to try to turn it into a movie or a TV show.
And
that really doesn't mean anything. Because you know, everybody's optioning everything, and it just means that somebody's taking a look at it. But I mean, you sure hope that that's going to happen. That, you know, if you can get it out to the right people, like Netflix or Amazon or City, that they'll do it. And actually, I think about 8 or so, maybe 8, 10 years ago, the Sci-Fi Channel was interested in the Zone Continuum.
Really?
I was doing it as I had repackaged the original 4 books and was doing a web series of the Zone Continuum.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I'd done, I think, about 140 chapters, weekly episodes. And it took some of the artwork from the original 4 books. And then I was just photoshopping like crazy and adding new artwork from photographs and from my art archives and creating a different kind of tapestry of a story. And so Sci-Fi was interested in it. And then they ultimately turned it down. But for a while there, you could feel the buzz that, oh my God, please make the take this project, run with it, do it.
And yet they go for Sharknado.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Well, they'll be kicking themselves in a couple years when it's, you know, and they'll be like, oh, I should have did it.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, back then too, maybe the subject matter was intimidating because of its visual presence. What happens, they just felt like, oh, this is too many computer effects. The budgets would be too crazy. But now, you know, it's so easy to do that in special effects. I mean, I like watching these new superhero shows, and you know, they've got the budget. I mean, it's not like they have a big budget, but it's just the computer technology has come down and cost so enormously that now you can just do anything on a small budget. It's really fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a time we live in seeing this really all unfolding.
Oh yeah.
So I see you also have a sketchbook in the graphic novel as well.
Yes, there's a. Oh well, actually, okay. Wait a minute. Did I put that? Oh no, I didn't put that one picture I was looking for, the guy in the trench coat. But like, these are some, you know, the sketchbook pages with earlier versions of what some of the characters look like.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a nice package. Mm-hmm. And then there's an ad for the Atomic Legion on the back. And,
oh, that looks cool.
And the other title that I butchered last show.
Mandala?
Yeah, I kept saying Mandela.
Mandela.
Or Mandela, yeah.
Mandela.
Mandela.
Yeah, I think when I first introduced it, it's like, you were working on a book, Mandela. It's like, no, it's Mandala.
Well, my wife is from Holland, and I would always say Amsterdam, you know, and she'd go, it's Amsterdam. And I'd go, Amsterdam. Sort of like in Singing in the Rain when they're trying to teach the blonde diction when they're first starting to have the talkies. And she goes, then I can't stand him. And she's going, and I can't. So anyway, a little digression there. But Mandala. Yeah, and actually, when you ask me what else is going on, the Mandala storyline is continuing too.
Okay.
And I've just finished about 30 some pages of new Mandala art that will also probably be out in Dark Horse Presents in the next year.
Excellent.
It's a really cool way of getting people's work out with the Dark Horse Presents.
Yeah, it's a nice format. I think they're going to shrink down the anthology size. I think it may be slowly turning into a normal 24-page book, which would be too bad. But I just think their sales are dropping, and they can't be so ambitious with it. But I know it was a prestige format for so long, and they always won the Eisner Award for best anthology format. Although maybe it was the only anthology book out there.
I know Image used to do it when they first came out. I don't think they do anymore.
Yeah. What's that?
Image, I think, did some when they first came out.
Yeah, yeah. I think I like the idea of. I was always amazed at how much story they could squeeze into 10 pages back in the a lot of those old Marvel books when they had two different characters sharing one title.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I look at those like Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., when he was sharing the book with Doctor Strange, and there was a 10-page Nick Fury episode, or maybe sometimes it'd be 12. But my God, they cram so much action and adventure into a half of a book.
Yeah,
it was just remarkable how they could tell a short story so well. So I think it's a nice format.
It's like DC with World's Finest.
Oh yeah,
yeah, because they had was it Power Girl and Huntress?
Yeah.
Was that? Did you feel? Was there just an earthquake or something?
Nothing there.
I just felt the earth move, and I'm not doing anything.
It's the power of Weeby Geeks.
I do the power.
It's the force.
Force.
It's what powers the geek revolution.
I also saw you got to work, did some Thor books with Jim Starlin. He was one of my favorite writers back in the day.
Yeah, he was the editor, and then Ron Mars was the writer on those. I think I did about 10 Thor books back then. Not a happy time for me, but...
Because of working for the big two, or...
Well, you know, I grew up on the heyday of Thor when... It was really great cosmic mythology, and the adventures were just so fantastic, whether they took place on Asgard or in outer space, or, you know, some incredible adventure on Earth. And so I always wanted to do Thor. So here I am doing Thor, but then they decided to have a new direction for the character. And so Thor basically became psychotic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he was nuts. And all of his friends, like Beta Ray Bill, each episode, Thor would go berserk and try to kill some old friend or some villain or something. But it was always about trying to restore his sanity somehow and into psychosis. But it was just not a fun project for me. And the writer didn't like my artwork. I hated the inking. Nobody liked anybody on that. and it eventually just blew apart. It just was doomed to fail.
Wow.
That's too bad.
So there was some pretty good cosmic writer and publisher with
that strange. I talked to a lot of people who love those stories, and I'm really glad. I mean, I talk to people all the time that remember those books and just love the action going on. So that's a great reward to hear that.
Well, I think that might wrap it up for this week. Check out Bruce's book, The Zone Continuum, comes out next Wednesday, February 24th. They could find you, your website's pigdogproductions.com.
Well, the best thing to do is find me on Facebook. I've got a Zone Continuum Facebook page besides my own personal page. And on the Zone Book Facebook page, I'm always posting new previews and news about what's happening with the project. I was showcasing artwork from the book months and months and months ago. So it's a fun page to look at. I don't bombard regular posts. Just tasteful periodic posts to show you what's going on with it. And then we can anytime anybody wants to dialogue, then they could just send me a comment or something. And you know, I love talking to people about anything, really. So I always encourage communication.
Awesome. Well, we thank you again for coming on. again, go out, tell your friends, pick up 2-3 copies for yourself. The Zone Continuum, you're not going to be disappointed. This is coming from someone who read the originals and loved the originals. So I'm excited. I just can't wait. I really can't wait. Thank you. I
can't wait for your review. Well, actually, if it's not a good review, don't tell me. Yeah. I only want to hear if you like it. Otherwise, I can't take it right now. But,
So far, I can say I'm not disappointed. I'm definitely excited to see the book back, and I'm excited with what I've read so far of the story.
Great.
So, yeah, it's definitely, I think it's money in the bank.
All right.
I just hope others see the same.
I see a Facebook quote there. Money in the bank. Mike Lemke says, money in the bank. Well, thank you so much, you guys. You geeks.
All right, thanks for being on.
Yeah, thanks for
coming. Yeah, it's great to have you.
I'm always happy to share our geekness together.
Yeah, we'll have to get you on again, talk about some of the past movie projects you've worked on.
Anytime.
And maybe talk a little bit more about the new Pixar project once you're available, once it's available to be talked about.
Oh, okay. So. I would love that. Anytime. You know I like to talk.
Oh, yeah. So, until next week.
Want to know more?